Department of Health Services. Catherine?
Hello. I'm going to be talking today about coordinating chronic disease efforts in the state of Wisconsin. And I'll give some more background on what that really means. I'd also like to thank Courtney Saxer, who couldn't be here today, but she has helped in many different ways helping put this together. I have no relationships to disclose, and I wanted to thank the team at Population Health Institute, who are our evaluation team, and then all of my colleagues and coworkers at the Department of Health Services, who have sat in on different either leadership groups or work groups. So I will look at one way and one approach for coordinating efforts across these different programs that that are related to chronic disease. I'll explain some lessons learned that we've had over and how it's driven our approach to looking at things, and then kind of look at defining some framework and some theory behind why we're looking at how we're doing this. So the bureau that I work for is the Bureau of Community Health Promotion. We have about 115 people in our bureau. We work on programs that relate to children and youth with special health care needs, cancer, maternal child health, diabetes, heart disease and stroke, and tobacco prevention, nutrition, physical activity, and arthritis, all of those together. And so the idea is that we're better when we're working together. Often, because of many different reasons, funding included, we're very siloed in our programs, and we work really well with our partners in our different topic areas, like the topic of tobacco control. However, sometimes working across our programs within our department is not always easy. And so we're looking at how do we kind of break down some of these silos and work together better, no matter how we're funded, no matter how we're structured. So we've been working on integration and coordination since about the 90s, when some staff and leaders recognized that all of our disease areas have the same root causes, and that so we really need to work together on some of these cross-cutting topics. So some of the main lessons that we've learned over those years are, first, that we need resources and key staff and time and funding to focus on coordinating, that is someone's full-time effort, at least to get it started, because it's a part of that infrastructure need. Second, trust, building trust with colleagues and between groups is really important, facilitating that building of trust, because you have to trust someone to think that we're going to work on a project together, and so that relationship piece is really important. Third, flexibility, not always knowing exactly how the things are going to get done or potentially even where we're going, because sometimes with flexibility it can lead you to places you never thought you're going to go, which are good. And then finally, a focused effort. And this is what I'll be talking about a little bit more. We recognize that often we work on a project and we try and include all these different people and it falls on one person, and we call it kind of trying to be coordinated, but it falls to this one person to try and make this all happen on top of what they're already doing. And so what we are trying to look at is how do we create a structure and some infrastructure for working on one effort across our entire bureau and really putting some resources into that. So we looked at doing a pilot, and this was about a year ago now, that a group of leaders and some of the staff, like myself, got together and said, let's pick a pilot to see if this can work, that we're encouraging everyone within our bureau to work on something that impacts all of our programs. And so what we chose was a tobacco sustainability effort. It was timely because it was going to be happening already. There was some infrastructure in place. It was tobacco, of course, is a common risk factor. Also, it was helping build some capacity internally, knowing, trying to learn more about environmental and system changes that tobacco knows a lot about, that other programs might benefit from getting that information. And finally, it was working towards increasing the reach of our programs and our partners for the tobacco program and vice versa for other programs. So our initiatives or our goals were to, one, increase the number of programs working on a coordinated effort. As I was saying before, we've been doing this since about the 90s, and often it was about three programs working together on any one coordinated project. So we wanted to double that and see if we could get at least six programs to work together on this. And then second is was to build the capacity of our programs to engage in these evidence-based changes, systems, and environmental strategies that tobacco knows that we could understand from them. So we there was an FTE that was hired to kind of get this started. Different capacity building meetings were held with the program coordinators from those that list of programs that I mentioned before, heart disease, stroke, diabetes. And we got people together, and this was a team effort between tobacco and nutrition physical activity, because that risk factor, those risk factors are also, of course, related in that in that capacity that they're risk factors for all of these different chronic diseases. And so they got together, they talked about what it was to work on a tobacco sustainability effort. What does that look like? What are some strategies around that? So building that understanding within our staff. Then the tobacco partners had a statewide meeting that was held to kind of kick some of this off, really start understanding what it means. Partners were invited to come to that. And then partners also, we encourage partners to be involved in looking at next step strategies after that meeting. And so some efforts included partner calls that were sustainability calls that were involving multiple different partners. That was part of the infrastructure already going on that we tapped into. So some of the results is that our goal is to have six programs engaged, and 10 programs were engaged. So we surpassed our goal, which was great, our kind of infrastructure goal of doing that. Second, we were hoping that about five external partners would be engaged, and all of the programs said that they engaged at least one partner. So my approximately 10 external partners were engaged in this process. We also want to make this relevant to people's work, because this is something that we'd like to see be sustainable and something that all of programs are coming together to work on. So these results showed that 89% thought it was relevant to their work, 78% said that it was helpful, and 62.5% said it was worth their time. So we're hoping to bump that up more, but trying to look at, this was done in a post-pilot survey to look at staff satisfaction. And then these were some other thoughts from staff that they were motivated and excited to be working on an effort, especially outside of kind of what they usually do. And the other one is that they're more comfortable supporting other programs' work, which is great, because that is part of that relationship and trust building. So some of the lessons that we learned from this is that staff really wanted to be involved right from the get-go selecting the project. They felt that it was put on them, and that is so we took that into huge consideration. Second, we needed more clarity of roles and responsibilities. The idea that it was a little too quick, they wanted more planning time and communication pieces around this, which again we've taken into consideration all of these actually, but was a sufficient technical assistance. So it took a little bit more technical assistance than we were expecting from the tobacco program to work with the other programs. So that is another piece that we recognized. And then finally, we looked at how do we make this part of how we do business? How do we step away from relying on one person, and we look at how do we create some kind of structure so that we can work together on projects no matter how we're funded. And so that's what I'll talk a little bit more about right now, is I'm looking at some of what we're doing in this pilot as inequality improvement framework. I think that the biggest piece that I really like about quality improvement is that experience is the expertise. People who are working within the system are the experts in how to come about solutions to issues. And so that's one piece of why I think it's good. I think it helps build trust, and it also helps build that collaborative decision-making. The second piece is that what I'm looking at is a six-month process in kind of a plan, do, study, act cycle. And I know that's a little bit different, kind of brings us to our last point of flexibility. It's a little different than how we've traditionally looked at QI. QI usually is a quick turnaround, and so this is, we're looking at kind of a six-month process as the plan, do, study, act cycle. So that's what I did. I put our pilot into plan, do, study, act. We were really good at kind of choosing our initiative initially, and we know that there are some lessons learned that we got from that and how to do it differently. We were really good at evaluating it and studying it and trying to make those changes to work on another coordinated initiative. But what we recognized is that we needed some more structure and process around how we were going to work together, and that came out very strongly. And so we wanted this to be a first step in working on these coordinated initiatives on a regular basis. And so what I did was then to put our next coordinated initiative into the plan, do, study, act cycle and think about what do we need to do in the planning phase to make sure that we are more successful in the doing phase and the implementation phase. And so I put months on this, so this turned into about a 9-month process. And I joked it's about the same amount as having a baby, so that's interesting. But So we really focused a lot on the planning phase a little bit more in the picking the initiative and setting the structures up. So how we picked it this time was that we involved everyone within the entire Bureau. We asked them to submit ideas for what they'd like to work on for this coordinated initiative. We had a meeting with those people to review, and others if they wanted to attend, to review these efforts to make sure they kind of met some certain criteria that we recognized we would need, some infrastructure pieces that would need to be in place. And then we had a bureau-wide meeting with those about 90 people, I think, at that bureau meeting to pitch their suggestions. So everybody kind of talked about what their idea was for a couple minutes, and then we narrowed those suggestions down to 3. And based on those 3, we sent a survey out to the entire Bureau to ask what one they would like to pick. And the one that was chosen was a very internal one to work on data coordination needs between our Bureau and the Office of Health Informatics, which is where we get most of our data. And it was overwhelmingly the most supported one. 67% of the people that voted for this effort. And it crosses bureaus, which is great because then it starts getting us into the next phase of working together with other efforts. So the 3 goals for this initiative was, one, to develop a data effort quality improvement plan with the Office of Health Informatics between our 2 groups. Look at trying to take one of those QI ideas and those next steps to actually implement a solution to one of those issues that we identified. And then 3 is to develop a repeatable framework so that this can be done over and over, no matter how I'm funded. I'm on the Coordinated Chronic Disease Grant right now from CDC that all states got. And so thinking about how do we continue coordination no matter what, like I've said a few times. So the next step was to develop a structure of how this group could work so that we could repeat this over and over again. And I think we've heard really good examples, and where I started was with emergency preparedness, thinking, oh, we can just take these pieces from emergency preparedness and put them into the chronic disease model. And once I started getting into it, I realized that because chronic disease has a little bit extra time on our side, you know, we don't have that rush piece, we do and we don't, but we don't need to be as hierarchical, we need to be in more collaboration decision making. And so I took key pieces from, or key roles from project management and the emergency preparedness, and I put them into a collaborative leadership model so that everybody has kind of a piece of the pie. Everyone on our team has a couple different hats that they wear. One, they work on the project in the topic area around data quality that we are that project, but they also come to the table with either communications as a key piece or evaluation as a key piece of what they're bringing to the table. Usually this is all done by one person, the project coordinator. And so we are looking at how do we make this sustainable no matter if there's one person or not. And I'm more than happy to talk more in detail about these different roles and why we chose them. And so right now what we're working on is compiling this needs assessment. We're working with our team, but then also additional people who have not been part of the official team, and these are epidemiologists and other key staff that use data often. Some of the lessons learned so far is that it's a very complex topic. This is a lot more complex than I was thinking, probably, initially. I am not an epidemiologist, so this was really a good thing to understand. And then also, we invited everyone from our bureau to be part of this team. They could self-identify if they wanted to be part of it or not. And so with that great diverse group, we also have we've also identified that we're all kind of trying to solve different problems sometimes, and so really coming around one issue to look at and staying focused in that. Often our problem kind of goes big and then small and big and small again. So right now our next steps are completing our needs assessment and looking at picking one area that we want to really focus in on. And maybe doing some small QI, some quick PDSA cycles around that one topic, and then finally compiling our process that we've used so that it can be some kind of manual to do for the next effort and a starting place for the next coordinated initiative. That is the end of my presentation. So thank you so much. And I guess now it is questions. I could have left.
That's perfect. Thank you all. We have about 10 minutes for questions. Are there any clarifications, questions you all might have of our presenters? This is the audience participation part of the event. Please.
So the question is for Sue Kelly. So the other presentations had a significant details about pieces of local and regional connections around response. But I didn't quite get that in yours. I may have heard about Bellevue and your hospital, but was there any interfacing with any of the other kind of emergency response units in Manhattan, and what did that look like?
I'm certain there were. I'm probably not equipped to speak about it. I'm really coming at this all from an operational standpoint. Funny, I've always sort of felt slightly out of place with these. I mean, I do love presenting about operations, but I hardly ever hear other hospital administrators coming to speak about. It's interesting too this time because I think all three of you are from departments of health, more or less. So I guess the contrast is even more apparent. I'm certainly where I just can't really say, from my perspective, I'm not sure what that involved.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, please.
I have a question for the last speaker. I was wondering, you mentioned that each of the programs are able to bring an external partner to the table for the coordinated issues. Do you have
Yeah, the Medical Society, the Wisconsin Alliance for Children and Families, I think that is the right one.
Council.
No, what is it?
Wisconsin Council.
On Children and Families. Okay, thank you. We have a Community Health Worker Alliance that was involved. these are the ones that I'm thinking off the top of my head. Do you have any like specific that you're thinking about engaging?
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, if they are they involved in using the data that comes from the office to help implement it?
Oh, okay. So that
was that for a different company?
Yeah, that was okay. For the pilot with the tobacco sustainability effort. So this next one with the data. We have not brought any external partners because it's so internal to our programs and so kind of administrative process of how we work together with them. So we have not included any of our external partners. Not saying that if we are if we do start moving to a point where we'd like to look at one specific area that a customer would be an external partner, then that might be revisited. But right now, our customers in this are all internal, and so that's why we're, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Please.
The question for the last speaker. You've brought together an impressive number of people to look at the different ideas that came up and get all together all the submissions, and here's how you ask them to choose what idea to focus on, and you ask them to prioritize based on impact or benefits, and here's how that happens.
Yeah, so about a year prior to doing that, we had a retreat with some key staff who had been involved for a long time, like I said, since the 90s, who've been working on this. So we had some key staff come together and do a process to really identify what were some of the most important criteria from your perspective if we were to work on this in this effort together. What are those criteria? And impact, reach, focus on health equity. I'm trying to think of other key criteria that came up as key pieces of this. I think system and environmental change came up as a piece, as a criteria. So those criteria were set by a very similar group of people. And then at this meeting that we had, it was done at a meeting, so we tried to bridge the gap between people who could come and people who weren't going to be able to come, but we wanted to get their input too. Was that we used a nominal group process. So first we asked everyone to pitch their idea for about 2 minutes. So we had about 8 ideas that people put forth, and so that was a good amount because much more than that it would have taken a lot longer. And people pitched their ideas, so anybody who wrote it, they pitched it or they designated someone to pitch it. Then we had everybody ask questions if they wanted clarification on anything. We had them timed for 2 minutes so that we didn't just like keep going on and on. And then we asked everybody to do a first vote using sticky dots, and that's what we did. We voted on which ones we wanted to do, and we came up with the top 3 that had the most dots. We talked about those in greater detail with the group to see if they had any other additional thoughts or questions that came up, and there were some interesting discussions with, I know that it sounded like it's a lot of 80 people, but we had everybody like pair off or doing groups first so that they kind of got their issue out, and then coming back to the group and asked as a group, we facilitated that. We actually had an outside facilitator help us with that a little bit, and then we said, okay, yep, these are the top 3, and everybody seemed pretty okay with that through the discussion. And then we went back and had this survey, and everyone in our bureau was invited to vote on those top 3. We explained them.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wonderful. Thank you. We're out of time, but if you have an additional question, please invite you to come up and address that to the speakers. Please join me in thanking our presenters today.